Nearly got a try on that left-hand side. What happened?
Oh, but I've gone up and over and bloody head over biscuit. It wasn't enough stability there for myself, but no, I was busting for a bit of meat this game. It didn't seem to work out.
Hello, cheers, and welcome to the Scrum of the Earth podcast, the weekly show for news, reviews, great interviews, and so much more, all about the world of rugby. My name is David Lawrence. I'm an American rugby fan who follows the game wherever I can find it, all over the globe. If you'd like to get in touch, I'm easy enough to find on all your socials, and you can always just drop me an email at thescrumoftheearth@gmail.com. Well, you have undoubtedly deduced by this point that this is not your regular weekly episode, but is in fact yet another bonus episode. This time, I'm absolutely thrilled to welcome back, frankly, one of my favorite people on the spinning green marble we all share. It's the one and only Mr. John Anderson. John, my friend, how the heck are you?
Thank you very much. Yes, and thank you for that very kind intro as well. Yeah, I'm doing okay, mate. I'm doing okay. We're getting there, still hopping about, but we'll be getting turned into the Iron Man quite soon. So looking forward to that. But
well, regular listeners will remember you from at least a dozen bonus episodes, but what they might not know is, on top of being, you know, an expert, you're also a famous actor. So, you know, according to your IMDb page, a tall, sinewy, austere-looking character actor with silver hair, rugged features, and a distinctive voice, John Anderson appeared in hundreds of films and television episodes. Immensely versatile, he was at his best submerging himself in the role of historical figures. He was a familiar presence in Westerns and sci-fi serials, usually as an upstanding, dignified, and generally benign citizens. John, do you consider yourself a benign citizen after all these years?
I mean, I certainly wouldn't go with that. I think other people may have an opinion on benign. Not convinced that's the most apt description. Jovial and slightly loudmouthed might be a bit closer to heart, but I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a career in acting for me. You know, if anybody's casting, any of your listeners are casting, and they want a gruff, bald, Scottish bearded man for their films, then, you know, just hit me up.
I feel like that's a pretty big demographic.
Yeah, most of Scotland is gruff, bald, and bearded these days. Walk down there a lot for the haircut industry in this country.
Well, John, thank you again for joining us here in the Scrum of the Earth. It's just always a great day here when I get to see your smiling face and hear that laugh. So, the URC, possibly my favorite competition. I'm still leaning towards Super Rugby, but the URC, it's damn good. They've gotten through 13 of 18 rounds. What's generally been your take on the league this season in general? Anything sort of jump out at you as being particularly surprising this year?
Yeah. So I think to come back to your very first point, actually, Super Rugby this season is outstanding. The quality and some of the games, like, it's every weekend you're getting last minute winners and drop goals and this and that. And it's such a good competition just now, if you like attacking rugby. And I think that's where the URC really is standing well as well. You know, the attacking play in the URC just now is outstanding across the board. I think the thing that probably jumps out most is it's a World Cup. We're post-World Cup, which a lot of, you know, particularly the Irish and Scottish teams, you know, a lot of players are away at a World Cup. And I think it's surprising, actually, the quality that we've continued to see. Yes, there's been some rotation, but we're still seeing big, big teams playing big players and looking to, you know, put performances down with their top internationals. So I've been really surprised at how much, like, from a Glasgow perspective, how much we've seen those international players, you know?
Yeah. Well, if you look at the table, Leinster, as always, they're on top. They're 5 points ahead of your Glasgow Warriors, who are followed by the Bulls and Munster, the only other two teams in the 40-point range. Then it gets a bit messy with Stormers, Benetton, Ospreys, and Ulster, all within 4 points of each other. And then right behind Ulster, three teams are knotted at 34 points. You've got Edinburgh, Connacht, and the Lions. Do you see any of those three teams supplanting the current top eight?
I reckon I'll have to, you know, Craig will obviously listen to this, so I'll have to put my cards to the mast and say, I do think Edinburgh have got, you know, a lot of quality in that side. Mm. They're not a you know, finishing eighth in the table side. They're a top six, definitely a top six, maybe even higher sort of side with the quality of players they've got at their disposal. Now, for one reason or another, it's not clicking, and that's, you know, down to a variety of reasons. I'm sure, you know, there'll be questions asked across the board, but I think Edinburgh, if they could just get a wee bit of run of form and a wee bit of confidence, they could be a very dangerous side for anybody, particularly when it comes to knockout rugby. I think they're definitely a different beast this year to maybe the knockout things they used to play when under Richard Cockerell, for example, where hilariously they bottled every knockout match they played, which made me chuckle heartily.
Do you think coaching is the problem right now? Because you look at the roster and you're like, damn, this is a good team. And then they make mistakes. They let things slip. They kind of ease off. Do you think it comes down to coaching, or is there, like, I don't know, some sort of curse on them?
Well, I mean, if it's not the players and it's not the coaches, then obviously it's witchcraft. So, yeah. You know, that's we have to look at all the possibilities here. But I mean, yeah, with that, as you say, with that roster they've got available to them, there's no way, you know, Edinburgh should be struggling against some of the teams they've maybe not performed against. And that then the first question you have to ask is, you know, how are they being coached? Who's calling the shots? But I think you've also, with Edinburgh, you've seen, you know, losing Blair Kinghorn early in the season was a massive blow for them, you know. Despite the back three they've got, he's a massive blow, and he was covering 10. You've now got Ben Healy has played almost every minute, if not every minute of the season so far. And like anyone who's had to play that amount of rugby, generally you'll have a kind of roller coaster. Especially he's a young player. He's never been in that position where he's the man, the 10, and he's learning on the job very, very much. So I think there's elements of a couple of key positions that are a wee bit weaker than they should be. But I would be asking massive questions of the coaching team, because I'm not sure about Sean Everett in the slightest.
So this is a question that always fascinates me. You look at Edinburgh, they're sitting in ninth, but they actually have one more win than the teams in the seventh and eighth spots. So they're just not getting those bonus points. Like, what am I supposed to glean from that? What does that tell me about the club? Is it saying, does it tell me, oh, they, you know, they're right there. They're right there. Anytime they could just break through. Or does it say, tell me that there's something fundamentally wrong?
I think it probably comes back to, again, probably Ben Healy, actually, you know, without pointing individual figures. You know, you're looking at Ben Healy's not the type of 10 that's going to have, you know, a free-flowing Edinburgh backline, which that backline should be, you know, pretty, you know, prolific, let's say. They've got a lot of talent out there. Yes, they're missing Darcy Graham, but, you know, to be able to replace Darcy Graham with Buffelli or Wes Goosen is, you know, you're in a good place at that point. And yes, I think, yeah, so Healy's maybe slowing things down. He's definitely more of a tactical kicker than a free-flowing throw the ball about. But I think the Edinburgh are struggling a wee bit in the centre as well. Their centres, you know, the partnerships they've got, it's just like, you know, if you were naming a Glasgow-Edinburgh select, you're unlikely to pick the Edinburgh centres. Well, I would not pick them anyway. But, you know, I think in general, you would be unlikely to pick them. And I think they would struggle to get into most teams across the URC.
Yeah.
Which then you're then kind of looking at, right, well, 10, 12, 13 are not set up to score lots of points. So what are we relying on? Forward dominance. Okay, we've not got our line out. It's not the best in the league. Our scrum is good, but, you know, we're still relying on 37, 38-year-old WP&L. So there's a couple of things not right with that Edinburgh team. And whilst I think across the board, they've got fantastic talent available to them, it's back to that. There's a couple of key positions that are just not working. And I think that's just what's maybe hindering them at the moment.
If you took someone who's generally considered like a top world coach, if you took, Scott Robertson, you know, any of these top international coaches, and you just kind of plopped him right in there, how quickly would Edinburgh turn around? And would they go from right around that bottom of that top eight to top two? Or is it more complicated than that?
So I think you would see impact straight away. I think you've got very intelligent rugby players at Edinburgh that would, with a with a new coach and with a world class coach coming in with clear communication and a clear, you know, kind of plan, I think you're likely to see massive impact, very quickly. I don't know about top two, but I think Edinburgh have the potential to be a top four side with that team. I think that's really where they should be aiming. I think, you know, if you look at the league now, right, you've got, yes, your South African teams, but there's always a wee bit of a weird situation with the league if you get drawn against them away versus if you get drawn against them at home. And that inequality, this is, you know, for your listeners who don't know the URC that well, it is an absolutely ridiculous setup where you don't play home and away. But then you guys are used to that in America because you do mad conferences and stuff like that with the NFL and stuff. So you guys are used to this nonsense. But no, I'm a traditional home and away sort of guy. One game each, but no. So sometimes, you know, teams will not have to play, you know, the Stormers in South Africa, which is a very different beast to playing them at home in the UK and, you know, in Scotstoun and Edinburgh. But I think, aside from Leinster, I don't think Glasgow or Edinburgh or any of, say, the top Irish teams, I'm excluding Wales at the moment because they're really struggling, but I don't think anybody would really fear anyone else. Like, everyone would think they can beat everyone, home and away, and would fancy their chances. So that's why you're then sitting saying, well, Glasgow, I think Glasgow are a top four side. I think Edinburgh are a top four side. I think you're then looking at the Stormers are probably they're a top four side. And then it just comes down to the draw as to how that pans out. So it's very interesting. But yeah, Edinburgh are not firing quite as well as they should be.
But a quick side note, the NFL schedule is actually really simple once you understand how it works because of the divisions and everything. I'm sure if we could get Lewis Lee Salmon on here, he could tell us all about it, being the expert.
He's now an expert. I genuinely think he played. So there was an Xbox game years ago called Blitz the League. So it followed on from NFL Blitz, which was
a great
franchise, arcade style NFL, brilliant. And I think in this Blitz the League, you play as you basically do a hybrid role, and you become the league's first defensive and offensive player. So you play both positions, and then so obviously it means you're involved in all the play. But yeah, like he's obviously played this game and went, I'm going to play multiple positions. I've got this. Yes, it's two offensive positions he's talking about, but you know, he's a running back.
I actually wish the guy well. I know a lot of people say how much they want to punch him in the face. I enjoy watching him play. I think he's a great player. I don't follow him on Instagram, so he doesn't seem like a dick to me. But like, so I wish him all the best. I just don't see it coming. You know.
Yeah, the best he'll manage. Anyway. I think he'll be a kick return. He'll be a special teams kick return.
I think he was probably right to give it a shot. You know, why not?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, the thing I said at the time, you know, with everything that's happening in rugby just now, and obviously the NFL's had its huge issues with concussion and the devastating effects of long-term concussions and impact it has on your life. Rugby is now, unsurprisingly, rugby is now in that space as well, where people are going, yes, playing rugby and doing this might be detrimental to your health. So in a short career, you could either go and play for a Welsh franchise, or, you know, sign for Gloucester, or play, you know, and earn, let's say a Rhys Samet, maybe 500 grand a year, £500,000, you know, $650,000, $700,000 a year, right? Cool. That's at the absolute top level of rugby.
Right. Yeah.
He goes in as a starting, you know, running back for New Orleans. He's going to be printing money, or, you know, Kansas, printing money.
Yeah, if he just stays a practice player like Christian Wade did, like, that's still a salary that most rugby players would really admire. So, yeah. Good for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Still don't take
best of luck to him.
So back to the URC, of course, we were just talking about how the table looks. But while I was looking, I hadn't clicked on it in a while, but I clicked on the shield tables, which I almost had forgotten about.
I forgot they existed, to be honest.
Me too. Like I checked early in the season and they were empty, but it was just because people hadn't played each other. So I looked today and was like, oh yeah. And it looks pretty much how you'd expect, except Munster have lost all four games they've played against the other Irish teams. Does that seem kind of weird? Like even Connacht are 2-2.
Yeah, that does seem weird. That does seem weird. I didn't know that actually. Oh, you know, that's the joy of the shield. I had no idea that had happened. So yeah,
That'd
I know. I
be
know
classic if
Scotlanders.
they lose the shield, if they get a wooden spoon for their own shield but win the
Oh
competition.
no. Win the league, but yeah, lose against all the other teams. That'd be so funny, wouldn't it? The shield things, it's all a bit weird. It's trying to create competition out of nothing. I know, and in terms of, you know, obviously the Irish, you're playing against the other three Irish teams. Wales is the same. We are paired with the Italian team, so we've got what we affectionately call the Pizza Crunch Trophy.
Yes, I've called it the haggis cannoli, but I think yours is probably better.
Exactly. Ridiculous.
Well, looking at your team, I mean, second place and 4 points ahead of the Bulls, you've got to be pretty happy with their campaign in the URC this year, right?
Oh, I mean, yeah, you have to be happy. I think the concern is there's been a wee bit of a drop off at Glasgow just over the with the return, not I guess with the return of the Six Nations stars, but just, you know, blending thing is in the things that have worked really well for Glasgow this season. Obviously, the line out, you know, the line out drive, Johnny Matthews, you know, the Erling Haaland of you know, rugby scoring goals for fun.
Time is
You
crime machine now legally, right?
know, yeah. So Glasgow shared a post where it was like Glasgow Warriors players who've scored 13 tries in a season. And it was Johnny Matthews. That is it. It's, you know, that's it's ridiculous. But the line out starting, there is teams that are starting to get a wee bit of a handle on it. We have sort of struggled a few times recently. We've had a couple of injuries which have kind of hampered us a wee bit. We still look, you know, obviously we'll maybe talk about some of the incoming players at Glasgow in a minute, but we still look shy. You know, I think Tom Jordan's been incredible at 10. But it's every time he steps to 12 where you go, oh yeah, oh yeah, you've got real potential to be something special in that position.
Interesting.
You're great at 10. You're doing great at 10, but you can see his kicking game maybe isn't quite up to it as a 10. He's definitely he's a distributor and a very flat runner as well. He'll, you know, but that's what he's learned playing 12, so that's why he's keen to come into the line and hit people. Very physical player. So, but I think Glasgow are still shy of world class 10, or at least a, you know, a really good 10.
Most teams are.
Most teams are, yeah. That's it. There's not many of them going round. That's the thing. So, and then yeah, but we're delighted with where we're at. I thought Glasgow might struggle this year, and I said that earlier on in your podcast many months ago that I thought Glasgow may struggle, with it being a World Cup season, and I just thought second season under Franco, you know, how's it going to evolve? What sort of player are we going to have? But I think the great thing about the way Franco Smith's got that team playing is you just know it's a Glasgow Warriors side. You could take the strips off them and, you know, have them wear plain white and, you know, cover, you know, give them all a face mask and they all look the same, and you would still know it was a Glasgow Warriors team because they're playing Glasgow rugby, and it's absolutely brilliant to see.
I think Franco has been pretty great. What is his long-term future? Do we even know? Is he when has he signed through? Has he been asked about whether, you know, long-term plans?
I mean, yeah, so I don't actually know. I think he probably, it was certainly 2 seasons. He might be in for another season. I'm just going to bring up the old Google on the site here.
Sure.
I mean, I think long term, obviously, he's got international experience already, having coached
And
Italy.
he dresses like it too.
Well, he does love a suit and tie, doesn't he?
There was a great around Christmas time, There was a great shot of him. They said, "Oh, and Franco Smith is decked out in all his Christmas his holiday finery," and of course, he's wearing the exact same thing. But you can just tell that there's like an extra little sweater vest with like a couple snowflakes on it.
That's as festive as he gets. But yeah, so I've just got it there. So he is contracted to Glasgow to 2026. So he signed an extension.
Oh, that's great.
So he has got a long-term contract at Glasgow, which is great. Obviously, the big question would be what happens if Scotland come calling? Because I think most people are now in that space where we kind of see Franco as the successor to Gregor Townsend. A lot of people wouldn't want that. A lot of people are still unconvinced. Franco, you know, he did struggle as Italy coach, but I think Italy are now, you're seeing the benefits of what he put in place all those years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and you've saw it at Glasgow, the trust he's put in young players. You know, he's brought through quite a few young players into that side and really, you know, rejuvenated a lot of players as well. Again, you know, I think everyone will be forever grateful to Franco Smith for what he's done for Stafford McDowell's career.
Yeah.
Given Stafford was, you know, he was out of rugby, he was out of contract, he'd already decided he was out. And Franco took a gamble, just he liked what he saw and, you know, brought him into the fold.
He's now been great this year.
Indispensable for Glasgow, you know, like in a position where there's so much strength and depth. Stafford McDowell just, you know, he's captained the side how many times, he's, you know, he's a leader and it's brilliant to see. And that to me says a lot about his environment and what he's created, you know, changing the captaincy away from, you know, Ryan Wilson as captain. You know, not sure Franco Smith liked what he saw, actually. So Wilson's out. Brings in Kyle Steyn as captain. Kyle Steyn, who, you know, generally nobody really kind of saw that coming, but what a captain. You know, eloquent, controlled. You don't normally have a winger as your captain, but, oh, does he get involved? It's great to see. He's created a really good culture there, and I'm excited to see what happens next.
I wish there was a site that tracked how often each player's name is mentioned just during a broadcast, because Stafford McDowell has to be leading the Warriors. Like, his name just comes up all the time. I feel like that's a good sign.
And that's the thing. It's not even just, you know, going forward. Like, you see, you know, a guy like Hugh Jones, you hear his name often when teams are attacking, because usually it's him cutting a sensational angle or whatever. But McDowell, it's both sides of the ball. It's the defensive work. It's the kicking game. What a kicking game that boy has. So, yeah, just a fantastic contributor and delighted to have him at Glasgow.
Well, the rest of the Glasgow season looks kind of like a good news, bad news kind of thing. Like, the good news is you've got Zebre twice. That's good. But the bad news is the other three games are all against South African teams, and two of them are in South Africa. Like, if you were to put on your pessimist hat, what's the worst case scenario for how far they could fall down the table in these last five games?
I mean, worst case scenario, I don't see us. We're not going to struggle at home, right? I don't think we're going to struggle at home. So, I think even in the worst case scenario, I don't think we'll lose those games. I think Zebre away. Zebre are, you know, best ball in the world. We talk about the, you know, the Italian renaissance of rugby, and you know how it's all hunky dory. And I'll get onto another point in that in a second, I'm sure. But Zebre are dug. They're absolutely mince, aren't they? They're just not very good. And you can see that Benetton have been prioritised by the Italian. They've went down the route. We're all saying the Welsh teams need to cut aside and get back to, you know, fund three teams or fund two teams really well. And Scotland, we're sitting, we've got two teams, and everyone's like, oh, we need a third side, we need this. Italy, they're sitting going, we've got two teams, but whoa, we don't need that one. Let's you know, they can have the bin juice, as we call it.
It does seem like the junior varsity.
Definitely. Yeah, they've given them some absolute shanners. So, but I think worst case scenario, I think Glasgow will probably lose badly in those South African matches. And I think the concern would be that then leads into the knockout stages. And if they've lost enough possessions, they're then away from home. and then maybe some of those, you know, because it's not that long ago, remember, that Glasgow hadn't won an away game in, you know, X number of months.
Right.
That wasn't that long ago. You know, prior to Franco coming in, obviously under Danny Wilson, we were terrible away from home a lot of the time. So,
well, are you a big believer in momentum? Do you think, you know, you hear it all the time, losing is a habit, winning is a habit. Like, if you just drop a few games late, does that just put your players in a bad state mentally for the knockouts?
I absolutely do. I think that momentum, you can see and you can feel when a team is confident. Like, when you watch a side and they've got that momentum, I think I will always go back to the title winning season for Glasgow. And I remember speaking to a fellow fan who worked at the same place I did at the time, and we were travelling in to work and we were chatting about the run-in. And it was like every game we were going, oh, that's a tough fixture. But it was Glasgow would grind a win out, or they would play really well and get a great result, and then it's grind the next one. And you just saw the momentum building, and there was key injuries happening right, left and centre. But that team just kept grinding forward slowly. You know, even looking at the semi-final victory, you know, that famous victory where, you know, we're losing the game throughout until the very last moment where we kind of pull it together. And then Finn with that ridiculous pass, you know, he's received a horror ball off Henry Purgos. And then off his wrong hand, I have it. DTH in the corner, and then he nails the conversion from the touchline. You know, if they'd lost a couple of games prior to that, that doesn't happen, because all that confidence, just knowing in your heart, believing that you're going to win, it's so important. So I think it's what Scottish teams, and the Scottish national team in particular, have lacked for so many years. We don't know how to, you know, we're better now, but there was times where we couldn't buy a win. And you can see, you know, it was like, and you talk to maybe guys like Sergio Parisi for Italy, where it's like, how many victories did he have in an Italian shirt? You know, not that many. And it's really difficult to keep going.
Well, speaking of momentum, the Sharks, they're starting to look like the team that we all thought they might be this season. How worried about you are them visiting Scotson? That's on Friday.
I mean, they've certainly got a bit of form. But again, any team visiting Scotstoun, I would fancy our chances against. I think in particular, teams coming up and teams that are not used to the artificial surface, actually it's a huge difference. It feels very different to play on. I think it will benefit the Sharks, actually, if they get out of their heads a wee bit, because sometimes teams when there's an artificial pitch, teams quite often get in their heads about what that means and how different it is. And rather than seeing the benefits of going, well, it's a fast playing surface, it's a solid surface that we know we're going to have sure footing on. You know, you're able to scrummage well, you're able to, you know, maul with absolute assurity that you've got grip. So if you see the benefits of it, you go, all right, okay, well, that really suits the Sharks game. But I fully expect them to come over, and the pitch will play a factor, but I reckon the Scotland crowd will be on top of them from moment one as well. And I think it's difficult when you're travelling away to do these tours. You know, the guys are away from their families for a couple of weeks. They're, you know, it's just difficult. And it's, you know, living out of hotels. I just think the guys will, you know, these away tours are difficult, and I think the Sharks will show that again in Scotstoun. I think
it takes them eight flights to get there, you know.
Well, I mean, it's the same time zone, but it's, yeah. I mean, it's about a 12 to 14 hour flight to the UK, which
that's
is
not,
pretty
not
brutal.
Fun for big people.
No, well, exactly. Yeah, they're not exactly, you know, they would do well to have some extra leg room. Let's put it that way.
but no,
I think Glasgow will be fine. But yeah, it's good to see them get a bit of form. Because again, these South African teams are, you know, on paper have talent, and we know that. So it's good to see them hitting their stride a wee bit.
Well, after that, a little while later, those 2 weeks in May, First, you go down to Loftus and then to Johannesburg. Do you think you can split those two games, maybe? The Bulls at home, it's a fortress.
Yes, I mean, that's the thing. I think best will in the world, I think we'll struggle to... If we take a losing bonus point away from those two, we've done well. I don't see us. I think we'll be hoping that most things are settled really by then, and we've kind of got enough in the bag by that point. Because it's going
to
be a challenge.
That's absolutely my next question. Is if you do manage to handle the Sharks at home on Friday and then take down Zebre in the next round, does that give Franco license to sort of send a B squad down to South Africa? If you were the head coach, would you consider that?
I mean, I certainly would, but I'm not the head coach of Glasgow, sadly.
Not yet.
We'll see. Time. Yeah, this is my application. I think it does give him license to rest some people, and especially with a view to, coming into the tail end of the season. But the way Franco Smith's treated his squad, and he's been quite, vocal about this, everybody can fit in. So everybody needs to be available. Everybody needs to be able to step in. Everybody that's available for selection is available for selection. There's no really, he's got his ideas who his key players are, but, you wouldn't be surprised, had Hugh Jones been available and Tuipulotu was available, you still wouldn't be surprised if Stafford McDowell went in there. You still wouldn't be surprised if Duncan Weir starts at 10, despite the fact Duncan Weir has shown absolutely nothing to deserve game time. He's, bad.
He needs to go back to the giant afro. People just couldn't help but love him then.
Exactly. It looked like a giant cuddly teddy bear, and people went, "Yay, that's nice." It gives them an opportunity, but I think Franco will take those games very seriously again because of the idea of momentum and the confidence it could build if they do go down there, put on a really strong performance. I think they'll treat it a wee bit actually like Europe. They'll treat it like a European tie where the squad will be... I wouldn't be surprised if you see guys like Ali Miller will be involved. Guys that maybe haven't had... Ali Miller's had a lot of game time this year, but generally not considered. Fagerson and Dempsey would be your 6-8. Miller, I think he'll be involved because, down in the fast tracks in South Africa, having a 6 that's as fast as your wingers is pretty good.
Mm.
So, it'll be an interesting squad, but I wouldn't be surprised if it is a blended squad as opposed to a full noise squad.
So I think we both agree it's most likely that you're going to go 3-2, maybe 2-3 at worst, almost over the last 5. So, as we like to say here in Massachusetts, irregardless, it's pretty certain that you'll have a good position heading into the postseason. Yeah. How do you see Glasgow faring when it becomes playoff time? And you just mentioned Europe. The last 2 years, the European exits, do those give you any concern? Are they completely irrelevant? Like last year, it was a semifinal. This year, so not totally shocking, especially with the kit clash. But this year, a little surprising. Is that a trend downwards that you were worried about? Are those things so completely unrelated it doesn't matter?
So, I mean, well, last year it was a final, in fact. It was, it was the final against Toulon. We got all the way to the final. I mean,
you shouldn't have worn the baby blues, man. When Toulon showed up with that black kit, it was like, oh, this game's over.
Yeah, no, they Toulon are a very, very strong side, and I think they showed that day. But Glasgow, if we remember the final, Glasgow, I mean, they didn't look comfortable. But they didn't look out their depth either. And there was times where they were definitely in that game, which was frustrating for fans because there was opportunities there. But the fact remains that we lost that. We lost our playoff in the URC as well, which we kind of felt like we were favourites for.
Yeah.
Disappointing. So I think... It is relevant. It is related. It's knockout rugby, and you only play knockout rugby a few times a season.
Yep.
So because we don't do cup competitions through the year, you play knockout rugby a few times a season. So it is a different mentality. is a different type of game. But I think, hopefully, Glasgow will have learnt a lot from last season and learnt maybe some of the mental toughness that it takes to grind through those final moments and get through those playoffs and those kind of knockout matches. Really, they should be treating every match from now till the end of the season as a knockout because, you know, they've got that opportunity now.
If I'm right, so if the season was over, you'd be matched up against Ospreys in the first round of the playoffs. Yep. Is that kind of the best case scenario?
I mean, I think any of the Welsh teams, the Ospreys are the only one that will be there or thereabouts. I think you would always worry, you know, I think the Irish teams have always got a game in them, you know, no matter which one it is, and even Connacht, they've always got a game in them. So even at home, you would fancy your chances and you would be, you know, Glasgow would be favourites, but you would still have a degree of uncertainty where you go, well, if that team turns up today and we are maybe not at our best, we'll get put away. So, but with the Ospreys, I think Glasgow could be, whisper it, I reckon Glasgow could be at 70% and still quite easily put the Ospreys away. So that would be a good outcome.
I was just thinking about it because, like I said, right now that would be the case, and Leinster would be against Ulster. Like, you'd much rather be facing Ospreys than Ulster, right?
Oh, just, yeah, 100%.
Who knows what happens with this Ulster team?
Well, and yeah, exactly. New coach coming in, new ideas. Again, you've asked right at the start of the show the impact of a new coach. You know, watch what Ulster do because they are changing. They're changing rapidly. And it's for the best. You know, like obviously, a lot of teams always find that when a new coach comes in, they get a bounce. You know, they get a return. Now, I'm going to go stats geek and I'm going to go a wee bit sports economics here for a second. The new manager bounce effect has been proven to be absolute and utter rubbish, right?
Oh,
because
okay.
Because what happens, right? Fundamentally, a team has, let's say, a par, you know, a mean performance where they should be performing. Now, when do coaches get sacked? Coaches get sacked when they're losing games. Coaches get sacked when they're not doing well, which means they're below their mean. Now, when a new coach comes in, generally what you'll see is a team reset to their mean and become kind of back to normal a lot of the time. It's not that the coach has had this huge impact and made them, worldies overnight. It's just that the team is actually, that's where the team should be performing. It's
right,
just
right.
The guy, you know, they weren't and they got fired and they're back to, you know. So it's a very interesting
you
concept.
You rid the players of the discontent and suddenly they're able to be back to,
Yeah, you almost clean the slate and it's, you know, it's impossible to say. You can say to players after every game, well, let's park that, let's place that away, let's put it, you know. But if it's the same voices saying that and it's the same people coaching and, you know, you're seeing the same faces, it's very difficult to park it and move. Whereas if you've got a brand new coaching team coming in, just going, right, this is how we want to play, this is what we want to do. And there is a, you know, players talk about impressing the new coach. Players talk about getting chances that they maybe didn't get. You know, great example. We've already mentioned McDowell, but George Horn at Glasgow, you know, coach after coach didn't fancy him. And then Franco's come in and went, you're the boy for me, pal.
I love that guy.
I have a
thing about undersized players because I'm like, I just feel like if you're that size, but you're playing at this level, that means you're twice as good as the next guy. You're twice as good as the guy playing your position who's much bigger than you. I love that.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? You see that with DuPont as well. He's not exactly the massive boy, but you know, it's the core strength and the aggression that you get from these, you know, small man syndrome is real in rugby.
Yeah, DuPont, his strength level it's mind-blowing, and you see it on his play almost every game. Yep. So you have a fantastic squad this year. So I'm not here to talk anyone down, but I'm just curious, are there one or two players that sort of, I guess, haven't reached your expectations this season?
There's a few players that maybe not. It's an interesting one. I think there's a few players that are not hitting heights that we would want from them this year. I think some of that is due to getting towards the end of their careers, perhaps. Duncan Weir, obviously, was one that we've mentioned. I think there's been a lot of injuries at Glasgow this year. I think people have come in and tried to take their chances, and they've done, you know, if you were to go through the 1 to 15, you would probably say most players are playing really well. A lot of disruption as well, because obviously you've had players away with Scotland for the World Cup and then coming back, and you know, someone like Jack Dempsey maybe would be someone we would say, you know, in your head you go, he's not hit the heights that he had done. But then you remember that he's not actually played that much for Glasgow. And he's been injured. He had a very serious injury whilst away with Scotland and had, you know, come back with a shorn, you know, shorn head and big scars down the side of his head where he'd got surgery. So it looks like Frankenstein's baby now, but like in the most beautiful way.
His ability to enrage Craig simply by wearing a scrum cap in a photo.
I really love that Craig. I think it's, do you know what it is? And Craig will hopefully listen to this. It's love. He's doing that thing where, you know, you pull on the girl's pigtails because, you know, because actually you really fancy her. That's what he's doing. He loves Jack Dempsey, and
he's
just
trying to get his attention.
He just can't admit it to himself yet, but maybe one day, maybe he will, and he'll turn up in a podcast with his cap on backwards, and it'll just be beautiful. Might do that. Actually, next pod I'll go on, I'll go on with my cap.
Oh, but we've given it away now.
Oh yeah, exactly. But no, I mean, someone like Dempsey, maybe. But I think we'll see a lot from him towards the end of the season. I think we'll start to see, you know, Tuipulotu's back, so we'll see the quality he can bring. Maybe, you know, again, it's really hard to say, but, you know, someone like maybe Jamie Dobby hasn't really, but he's barely played at nine. So, you know, it's hard to say because he's been brilliant on the wing. It's just not been at nine very much. So,
right.
But I mean, even then, I'm nitpicking because I think he has had a decent season so far. So,
any season where you struggle to find players who aren't performing to your expectations, that's a good sign. That means the season's going great.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. There's not many frustrations from a Glasgow perspective. I think we're all pretty content with where we're at and the squad we've got.
Well, the obvious flip side of that is, can you give us a few players who've really stood out for you this year? And, you know, if the season did end today, who would be the Glasgow Warriors MVP?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's been standouts probably across the board. One player that maybe doesn't get the headlines quite as much as the others, Josh Mackay. What a season that boy's had. Very, very talented player. Very scruffy, it might be the right word. He always looks like he's on the absolute edge of carnage, but like seems to hold it together all the time. He's a very, very good player. He's had a great season. Definitely, you know, stepped up this year. You know, we've talked about him already, but I think if you're looking for the MVP from Glasgow this year,
I know who you're going to say. Big Greg. Sorry.
Big Greg, yeah. Those opening performances, looked like it looked like he'd managed to finally, is it Drax in Guardians of the Galaxy that says, I've mastered the art of standing so still that I'm invisible to the naked eye. Greg Peterson tried his best to become Drax, but no, 6'10", Greg Peterson couldn't be invisible to the human eye because he was too busy dropping the ball.
Well, he's happy and warm in California now, so.
Excellent. Yes, well, that's good. California is a long way away from Scotland, so let's just keep it that way for a while, please. Yeah, no, I think, but yeah, I think I'm saying Stafford McDowell has been the absolute standout for Glasgow this year. Just, captained the side beautifully, kicking game, you know, as I said, defence and attack, it's just looped assured. Obviously, he's went into the Scotland setup as well, made a very good showing against Ireland. I think he's just a very classy player and looks so comfortable and so confident.
I think that's a great pick. Speaking of players, I thought we could finish off today with a little game I came up with in your honor. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you're a man who enjoys a bit of heavy metal. Is that fair to say?
It's been suggested at times that I may enjoy the heavier side of metal. Yes, my bands quite often when I send them videos of me playing guitar, one of the guys, his response is always, "Could you play that with a wee bit more heavy metal in it, please?" as a bit of a wind up, because my amp is cranked up to 11 most of the time.
You do like the distortion.
Oh, I love a bit. Well, I've got a good tone going, so it's nice.
So if I was to go through your closets and dressers right now, what would I find more of? Glasgow shirts or Metallica shirts?
Oh, let me just quick addition. It's probably Glasgow shirts, but only just. I think it is Glasgow shirts, but only just.
So I went and did some exhaustive research. You know how I am. Once I dive in, it's days. I'm just, nobody sees me because I'm doing so much really
the
wicked
blinkers
hard research.
Are on.
I might have three browsers open at the same time. Crazy. So what I found in my exhaustive research this time was the top 10 Metallica songs, at least according to the internet. I swear, I feel like we could do a whole separate pod about ways in which you disagree with this list. But for our game today, it'll have to do.
That'll be our sideline pods. Our sideline that we're going to do. We'll just do top 10 lists by bands, and we can just go in and tear them apart.
So your job in this little game will be to name a player to go with each one of these songs. Could be a player for Glasgow or Edinburgh. Could be international. Could even be a player from the past. Yep. If we were to turn it around and give you an example from my life, I guess it would have to be a Free Jacks player representing a Rush song. So if you told me Prime Mover, I'd of course say Josh Larson, Free Jack number one, and our eternal captain. You ready to dive in and give it a shot?
Absolutely. I think I'll give it my best. We'll see how we go.
I tried to come up with some players too. I don't think my list is going to be as cool or interesting as yours, and I don't have 10, but I have at least some to throw in here.
Yeah. Well, let's see how we go. So let's start at the bottom. Number 10. What have we got?
Okay. The number 10 most popular Metallica song, according to my exhaustive research, is a song called Seek and Destroy. Do you have a player who suits this song?
Well, Seek and Destroy.
Go ahead.
No, Seek and Destroy, 1981, the birth of thrash metal, a brutal song, but also Seeking and Destroying. That to me speaks back row that loves to smash people.
Okay.
So I've went with the back row that loves to smash people from the past. Jason White is my Seek and Destroy.
Oh, I love it. Oh, that's a great start.
I can imagine him having that in his head, just that as he's like running around battering people.
See, this is how I knew your list was going to be much more interesting than mine. I was like, oh, Tuipulotu. One and done. Impressed.
So what's your logic for Tuipulotu? Similar idea, smashing.
Yeah, exactly. He's the type of guy who looks like, go ahead and tackle me, but it's gonna hurt.
Well, I've got Tuipulotu later in my list, I'll share that when the time comes.
So our number 9 song is a song called Battery. I took this not in the sense of an electric charge, but like a crime. So yeah. I went with Blair Kinghorn for the way people treat him online when he plays tennis.
I like that, actually. Yeah, that's quite good. I've taken it even more literally. I went with battery, which is physical violence, particularly using fisticuffs. And I always remember one of the very first Scotland matches I went to when I was an adult. It was an Ottawa international. Alan Jacobson was playing a prop, and literally the first maul he was in, he was over the top battering this guy with his fists, just punching at him, pure violence. So I went with
I feel like that's frowned upon nowadays.
it is, but Chunk knew what he was doing. So yeah, I've gone for Chunk for battery.
Game's gone soft, man. Game's gone soft.
Yep, that's it. Game's gone soft.
Our number eight song is a song called "Welcome Home" (parentheses Sanitarium). Close parentheses. I decided that Duhon would be a good choice for all the people that say he's too South African to be Scottish.
Yeah, do you know, I because they are literally insane. So Sanitarium 1986 off the Master of Puppets album alongside Battery. Song about being in an asylum, being insane. I've actually went really broad here and went for the fastest brand of rugby in the world trademark, as being Sanitarium, because it was bonkers. It was and
Short-lived.
probably short-lived and probably deserved to be put in an asylum somewhere.
The number seven ranked song is a song simply called "Blackened." I thought I put in Jimmy Ritchie for his eye after that Hawass punch a couple of years ago.
That's a very good one. I like that. I've went for Blair Kinghorn for this, based on the song, right? So Blackened, opener to And Justice for All. Interesting title for Blair Kinghorn. But I've also thought about the actual song itself. It's very fast, very kind of brutally fast. And you know, but it's a bit of it's more of a grown-up song. It's you can see the evolution of it from the early thrash. And I think we're seeing that with Blair now he's moved to Toulouse. He's still brutally fast, but he's got a wee bit more about him these days. So I'm going with Blair Kinghorn for Blackened.
I guess his uniform was also blackened by that move.
Well, yes, exactly. There you go. Well, I mean, Edinburgh, they used to play in black, didn't they? But yeah.
Our number six song is a song called "For Whom the Bell Tolls." I thought a nice selection might be Finn Russell just for that gesture he made to the shed at Gloucester that time.
That could work.
Time's
Actually,
up.
at times I stole a wee bit of your suggestion actually earlier on this one. And I've actually went for Donkey Weir on this one for
Oh.
his aptitude for a last minute drop goal when the bell has tolled.
It's worth saying I love Duncan Weir.
Oh
It
yeah.
I'm not stupid. He's on the very, very tail end of his career. I've said on my own show many times, if he's starting for you, there's probably something wrong. But I just don't want to badmouth him. I just like him too much.
He's had a great career. That's the thing. Like, you know, I'm obviously saying from a Glasgow perspective now, he's not at the level we need now, and he's not performing, right? And he hasn't for a couple of seasons. But he still that doesn't detract from the career he's had and the, you know, the great things he's done in a Scotland shirt, a Glasgow shirt, an Edinburgh shirt. You know, he's been a servant to Scottish rugby.
What's his most likely next move? Commentator's booth, coach, or Major League Rugby?
Might be MLS. No, I think Duncan's quite settled, so I think it'll be commentators. I think
I
he'll be
thought so.
next to join the comms team. He's done a wee bit of that sort of work. But yeah, I expect to see him going into the commentary booth.
I'm looking forward to it.
Ah, definitely.
Okay, we're at the halfway mark. The number five song is a song called "Creeping Death." I thought I would go with Stuart Hogg for his self-esteem, for his public esteem right now.
You're suggesting that Stuart's behaviour is akin to the creeping death. Very good, very good. I like that. For this song, I've actually went so creeping death, brutally fast song. but a little bit raw on the edges.
Okay.
I've gone for Doohan.
Oh,
for
I love
this
it.
One. Brutally fast, brutally, you know, big, explosive, rah, but a bit raw around the edges.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. That might be the best one.
Well,
I admit,
I've got four more to go, so let's see.
Yeah. Well, I admit, so for number four is a song called Orion, and I was trying to think about, you know, is there a player who's done like something really spacey, or I came up blanks though. I have nobody for Orion.
Right. So I've went Orion is an instrumental song. There's no words. It's quite a beautiful song, actually. It takes you on a bit of a journey. It's very silky smooth and has a real quality to it. But it's really underrated. And for that, I've went for former Glasgow and Scotland centre, Sam Johnson.
Oh.
Now, silent. You would very rarely hear Sam Johnson speak. Like I don't even remember hearing him speak. So he's an instrumental. And he was silky smooth, very underrated, but had absolute perfection at times. Very, very talented player.
That is a perfect shout. That's great. Okay, I don't know if this will be good or not. The third song, or song number three, Fade to Black. I said WP Nell, who announced his retirement.
Very good, yeah, very good. This was a tough one, actually. This is the one I struggled most with. But yeah, I think, you know, VP Nell, retirement, I've went slightly different in that fading to black, in my head, what I've went for is someone who faded away but didn't announce their retirement, and who has still, on occasion, been called for the tackle bags. So I've went with Sean Maitland as Fade to Black. And another reason for that is, you know, it faded away, but Fade to Black is probably my favourite Metallica song.
Oh, wow.
And it is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful song with, again, silky smooth, beautiful acoustic sections, beautiful overdrive. Maitland was that. He was a classy operator who, again, probably quite underrated in his time, but faded away. And that's my Fade to Black.
That's brilliant. I swear, if somebody said, when did he retire? I'd be like, did he? I'm just,
2009.
I, even now, I don't feel positive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. Because, yeah, it was. Yeah, he still gets talked about for call-ups.
Oh, you might either love this or might just already know this. When I was looking this up in my exhaustive research, the little blurb about Fade to Black says, it's a dark track about depression and suicide, and in a bizarre twist of fate, James Hetfield nearly died while performing it in 1992 on a co-headlining tour with Guns N' Roses. A giant ball of flames shot up during the end of the song, and Hetfield got confused and stood right over it. He suffered horrible third-degree burns and couldn't play guitar for weeks, but the tour carried on. Does that ring a bell?
It did, yes, it did. James was simply on vocals. They got a stand-in guitarist. Came in and played James's parts, and yeah, so he got horrific burns from the pyro, and still has scars on his face to this day from it.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So yeah, bad times.
Well, we're down to our final two here.
Two, here we go.
Number two is, of course, the classic Master of Puppets. I wondered if we could use Toonsy here for somehow convincing everybody that he should still be the head coach.
Yeah, he's definitely the evil puppet master, isn't he? In the background, I've went for a more positive name, the puppeteer himself, the master himself, Finn Russell. He is if rugby was personified, you know, and we were going for the songs about drug addiction and drugs being your master. Finn Russell is my master. What a player. Finn Russell is rugby to me these days.
And now, for the first time in podcast history, we had to go to John Anderson for the positive take. can't believe I get the dark side of the coin, and you're like, look
what
at all this
has what going. Has gone wrong here? What has gone wrong? We'll have to edit.
I think if we play this recording backwards, there's going to be some weird things on there.
Yeah, that's it. Subliminal messaging of playing this backwards. It'll convince you that Townsend's the head coach and should be, and that John Everett has the master plan, and Blair Kinghorn's a 10.
Okay. I think you'll be unsurprised. Yeah, the number one Metallica song, according to the internet and my exhaustive research, is appropriately named One, a song I actually really love as well. I drew blanks on this one. I was trying to come up with something clever, and you'll be unsurprised to know I failed.
Dear me. I am surprised at that, David. You normally come up with some absolute belters for things like this. So One is, I agree, it's a phenomenal track. One of the greatest kind of journey songs that you get, where the song takes you round the emotions of, you know, MD, who knows the song will know this, but it's a song about, you know, based on the idea of a soldier who has lost his, you know, legs and arms, and is basically trapped in his body, wants to die, no longer wants to be here, but it can't communicate with the world. But it's kind of based on his inner thoughts and feelings, and how difficult that would be. Now, that's a very dark take on it. The actual song itself veers between beautiful, melodic, acoustic, brutally heavy metal with absolute class throughout it. Just, you know, a thread of technical perfection throughout it. So, for this one, I have went for none other than Sione Tuipulotu. He is the beauty, the brawn, the string of perfection all the way through it. He personifies One, in my view.
I just realized both of us should have probably picked a loose head, but there we are.
Too simple. No, we've went intellectual.
That's true.
On this.
You and I, it's 3D chess, or maybe 4D checkers, maybe. Or
that's it. Yeah, I'm playing 6D Monopoly here, and it's beautiful.
I'm still stuck on my 2D Parcheesi. Nerdy guitar side note there. I think Kirk Hammett in One might have shown us a new world in which you don't have to just have an acoustic guitar next to your, you know, powerful distorted electric guitar. You don't have to switch between them. You can go with a beautiful, clean sound on that thing, and it's just brilliant. It's like sparkling crystal. It's a great sound.
Yeah, the clean tone in One is, I try to, my acoustic tone on my amp, I try to model it on One, because I think just that's the best clean acoustic sound out there. It's just perfection.
John, my dear friend, it is so great to catch up with you. I know you kind of alluded to it. You've got some big things coming in just the next few weeks, which I can't wait for that.
Yeah,
I really wish you all the best for that. I'll, of course, be annoying you and checking in constantly to see how that's going.
I would expect nothing less, mate. No, I really appreciate it. And yeah, once I've got my, for those of you who don't know, I'm going to get my hip fixed. I've had a bit of a hip problem, so I'm off to get the same surgery as Scottish tennis player Andy Murray got, which is good, and I'll be fighting fit and be back on the tennis courts, back behind the drum kit and everything else as soon as I can be. But yeah, looking forward to it. 4 weeks today, in fact.
You'll be back to being Tennis the Menace.
Tennis the Menace. My team would say that as well, because I'm an absolute nightmare.
Before I let you go, anything you might want to plug for the Scottish Rugby Podcast? Any surprises coming up? Anything you want to give a shout to?
I'll probably just give a shout to the podcast itself. You know, obviously, we're in the post-Cammy era just now, and the guys are working tirelessly to make sure that the content, you know, we're trying to generate content with a fairly small crew, actually. And if anyone out there feels like they want to be part of a podcast or want to come in, you know, join us, you know, come and talk some rugby, then we're absolutely desperate to hear from you. So give us a shout, come and join us, and you come and be part of our merry little band of frenemies.
John, you are a man among men. I always appreciate your humor, your insights, and frankly, just the time you take to spend chatting rugby with me and all sorts of silly stuff, frankly. Good luck to your team for the rest of the season. I have a good feeling about it. Maybe we'll chat again after the URC is over for a little post-mortem of sorts.
Sounds good to me, mate. Yep, I'll be well up for that.
Fantastic. John, thank you for joining us here again today. Cheers. Talk to you soon and be well.
It gives me great pleasure to be here today.
Oh, it does, neat.